The holidays are upon us, which makes this a stressful time of year for most people. And that's been exacerbated this year because they come so soon after people have had to deal with loss, displacement, and damage to their homes caused by Hurricane Sandy. So what topic could be more fitting for this week's Please Explain than stress? Joining us now for a look at how stress can affect our health and how to cope with the pressure and anxiety of everyday life are Dr. Drew Ramsey, Assistant Clinical Professor of Psychiatry at Columbia University's College of Physicians and Surgeons. He's also the co-author of The Happiness Diet, published by Rodale, and Dr. Rajita Sinha, director of the Yale Stress Center and professor of psychiatry, neurobiology, and child studies at the Yale University School of Medicine, also joins us. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
We also invite our listeners to join in our conversation. I'm sure a few of you have experienced stress. If you have a question about stress, you can give us a call at 212-433-9692, or you can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org. Drew, it seems like almost anything can cause stress, but what are the most common sources of it?
Well, right now, I would say the holidays are stressing a lot of people. And of course, we're all hearing news right now of incredibly stressful events in Connecticut. And I think the first place to start is that stress is your body's normal response to environmental stressors. This is a fundamental piece of our biology that's very important.
Is there a normal level of stress just caused by everyday life?
Yes, and I'd even argue
is that the baseline?
Yeah, and I think there can be a healthy level of stress. I mean, I think we all perform somewhat better when there is some stress. When you have a deadline, you work a little bit harder than if you don't have a deadline.
Rajita, are there evolutionary reasons for how we respond to stress in the ways we do?
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. There are, as Drew was saying, it's a very important way by which the individual or organism learns that something is not okay. It's an alerting signal. It alerts all of the different organ systems in the body as well as the brain. It really mobilizes the individual to do something to survive. So evolutionarily, all organisms have this alerting response because it's a survival mechanism.
Is it usually a kind of fight or flight response?
It is a fight or flight response. That's the one that's most commonly studied and talked about. But an additional series of responses that we often don't talk about are tend and befriend kinds of responses. So really taking care of your own, befriending, extending out social support. And that happens in non-human primates as well as other types of mammals and other species as well. And those are really go right into coping mechanisms, which I think you will be talking about.
Well, it's interesting to note that these things which developed under very different circumstances now apply to having to give a speech or arguing with a spouse about money.
Or needing to update your Facebook page.
Or even responding every time you get pinged for something.
Right, right. Now, so stress is normal. When does it become a problem, Drew?
In mental health, we generally look at issues when they interfere with our functioning. So where I see this in clinical practice is when stressors become overwhelming, when it's more than just a deadline or one or two deadlines, when it's managing taking care of kids and a lot of professional responsibilities and all of the other stressors of modern life. And that begins to interfere with people's ability to function in the workplace, to perform well. When people begin to have symptoms such as difficulty sleeping, we know that chronic stress lowers immunity. We know that it interferes with blood sugar. And so when stressors aren't something that get dealt with, over time there's a biological response that really can be quite detrimental and interfere with people's functioning. And that's when we worry and want to intervene.
Rajita, is an acutely stressful situation like rushing to catch a train or being nervous about a big presentation at work as damaging as sustained stress over many days or even months?
That's a great question. Acute responses are not damaging. Those are, again, part of the alerting response. They get our brains sort of focused onto what we have to do. But there's sort of an optimal level. And if you can have an acute response that is uncontrollable or an acute stressor that is uncontrollable, I should say. So if you miss the train, for example, using your example of rushing for a train, and you miss it, and in fact you missed it, and now you're missing the job interview that you had to get to. So now that's becoming an uncontrollable situation, and you're going to have a real a heightened stress response, and this is not at the optimal level. It's beyond optimal. And it moves right into, I think, what we can extend Drew's explanation into what we call acute uncontrollable stress that can also become chronic uncontrollable stress, even before you have a mental health condition. So an acute uncontrollable stress can lead to difficulties concentrating, a heightened arousal state that starts to make someone feel like they're in a panic state. Again, in that example, sort of panicking, how am I going to let the folks know that I've missed the train? What will they think about me as a candidate for this job? And so on. So the mind will just rush into these different modes of sort of what do you do when you're stuck, and the body is responding in the same way. And that's not good.
But those are mental health things. What about when someone has a heart attack after rushing for a train, whether he's caught it or not? Is stress partly to blame?
Well, stress does play a major role in heart disease, both in terms of sort of risk, as risk factors like anger and hostility are well-known risk factors for heart disease. And acute uncontrollable stress can trigger an even bigger cardiac event if there are some lower-level abnormalities or arrhythmias that may be ongoing in somebody who is at risk. So stress is very much part of the risk profile in cardiovascular disease.
And we should talk about sort of what happens at the cellular level. I mean, when cells respond to stress hormones like cortisol, part of the reason for those problems is you have an increase in what we call reactive oxygen species. These are free radicals, why we try and eat blueberries and antioxidants. You see that cells tend to age faster. There's a nice study looking at women who have ill children, so have chronic stress, and their cells have something called telomeres. They get shorter as you're aging, almost like rings on a tree a little bit. They tell us how old the cell is. And these women had cells that had shorter telomeres. They looked older. They looked more aged. So there's a notion
that stress ages us.
Stress ages us. As Regina was saying, stress increases your risk of heart disease, diabetes, obesity. It really is underlying lots of chronic health problems we have in the Western world.
My guests are Dr. Drew Ramsey, Assistant Clinical Professor of Psychiatry at Columbia University's College of Physicians and Surgeons, and Dr. Regina Sinha, Director of the Yale Stress Center and Professor of Psychiatry, Neurobiology, and Child Studies at the Yale University School of Medicine. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. We're talking about stress on today's Please Explain segment, and a reminder that we will be going to a press conference. It looks like now it's going to be at 2:30, but we will go to it whenever it occurs to deal with this whole terrible, tragic situation at Newtown, Connecticut Elementary School, where 27 people were killed by a shooter. So stay with us for updates on that as well. There have been many studies on how stress affects the body. Do we pretty much understand the process by now?
I don't think there's much we totally understand now. I think we understand the basics of how stress is bad. And I think what's most important, and I think what Regina can speak to as well, is that we have lots of great techniques to help people deal with stress and mental health.
But before we get to that, I was wondering about its effect on different parts of the body. We've kind of skirted around it. How does, Regina, does chronic stress affect the heart?
Yeah, let me back up, because one more thing about cortisol that you were talking about that's important is that there's a lot of attention given to cortisol when it's too high and it affects cells. But given that this is a very important signal for our survival, when you have chronic stress, one of the patterns that we've noticed, particularly associated with chronic fatigue, is low levels of cortisol. And this is true in other stress-related conditions as well. And so you can imagine where, when the brain and the body is not getting the very important cortisol signal to prepare for stressors and then to mobilize and normalize the cellular and physiological state, that can be a huge problem too. So I wanted to put that out there so that extremes of both are not good. And that's really important. The other thing in terms of chronic stress, which is true for heart disease and blood pressure, which hypertension is one, is directly connected to.
Strokes as well?
And strokes as well to stress, is that as we get stressed and with chronic levels of stress, there's a shift in your baseline resting state, which we started to talk about in the beginning, sort of your normal level, where you are, you need an alerting response. But we're not always stressed. So there is sort of a comfortable state where someone is, and that can be different for different people and individually variable. But as we move through these chronic stress states, we sort of push up our autonomic nervous system, which is our sort of one of the very quick signaling systems. That's the system that is involved in our pulse and heart beating faster and our blood pressure. And the autonomic nervous system requires or has its own sort of corrective system.
Is, Drew, is stress mostly physical, or isn't there a psychological aspect to it?
Well, it's both. I mean, everything that's psychological starts as biological. So the stress originates in your brain always because you perceive something.
Are there stress hormones?
Yes. And so then, you know, the one we've been talking about mainly is cortisol. And so we have a very, very fast, as people often say, I feel it before I know. In the clinical practice, I feel the stress. And we all know that if a cab honks its horn, you get that tightening in your stomach instantly. And it's almost then you see the cab.
Well, people also feel migraines coming on. Are they brought on largely by stress?
Migraines are brought on by a variety of factors. Oftentimes food triggers, certainly sometimes stress and chronic stressors make people more prone to migraines. But when the brain perceives stress, it releases or triggers the release from the adrenal glands of things like cortisol, glucocorticoids.
Is it common for depression to go along with anxiety?
For sure. Almost universally, we see that those two travel together. And what's interesting, Leonard, is you see that there's a genetic variability. We actually now have a couple of gene signals where we all have this question. People experience stressors, things like Sandy or 9/11, and some go on to develop severe psychiatric or mental health symptoms, and others don't. And we now are starting to understand that some variants in certain genes actually predict this.
So the stress can trigger a serious response in some people, and others will just sail through.
Yeah, we see
have
that.
A rough time.
Yes, and part of that we're starting to understand has to do with genes like the serotonin transporter gene, which is involved in recycling serotonin, or a gene called BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which people call sort of miracle grow of the brain. It kind of keeps our brain cells connected. Variations in those genes do correlate and predict how people are going to respond to stressful events.
Regina, it used to be believed that ulcers were caused by stress, and now we know that they can be caused by a bacterial infection. But does stress trigger that bacterial infection?
There hasn't been as much research on that, but stress continues to play a role in ulcers. So there very well could be a link.
Well, we could see people having digestive problems when they're stressed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And just to add about the genes, because this is a fascinating piece, we have some idea about these genes that Drew was mentioning, increasing the impact of stress, so to speak, on psychiatric illnesses. But there are different genes that would affect the link between stress and physical illnesses. So it's not sort of like you're home free if you have stress and you don't have the vulnerability gene for depression. You may have it for cardiovascular disease, and that could be a problem.
Drew, how is obesity sometimes related to stress?
Obesity, fat cells tend to produce inflammatory signals, and there are a variety of ways, from psychological, that how people respond to being obese in the world, to, the physiological response of some increased inflammation, simply the stress of carrying more weight around. You can understand that from simply the knees of someone who is carrying around 50 extra pounds are going to wear down a little bit faster. And then I think there's tremendous psychological stress to being obese, as well as increased risk. As you're obese generally, you're going to have more difficulty regulating your blood sugar. You're going to have hypertension. You're going to have a variety of medical problems. That means more trips to the doctor's office, which tends to make people nervous. You're going to compensate with that stress, maybe with some maladaptive ways, like eating too much. And so that's one of the ways that I would see obesity related.
Rajita, some people will tell you that the reason that they got a cold or that the cold is lingering is because they've been going through a stressful time. Is that medically true?
Yes, indeed. There have been some very elegant studies that were done where they showed exposed people to a cold bug, and those who were stressed developed the colds, and those who were not did not. So there's been a very clear link between stressors and the susceptibility for colds and infections.
Like shingles?
Less clearly demonstrated with shingles, but there is again, epidemiologically, there's a link between those two, yes.
I got shingles last year when I was really stressed, so
that's
an N of one. Another thing that I think to mention is that cortisol, it sounds like a medical word, but that's just hydrocortisone cream. And we put those on rashes to decrease our immune response. And I think that's a concrete way of thinking about it. When your body releases that, it's partially to decrease an immune response so you can really focus on the evolutionary things you need to focus on, fight or flight.
What's happening in the mind and body when stress causes sleeping problems like insomnia? People tend to fixate on their problems when they can't sleep. But is it there a direct corollary?
There is. I mean, there's tremendous rumination that happens. When people can't sleep, that's really one of the worst things that can happen for mental health. And in my patients, when people haven't slept for a day or two, it's really, you'll see them at their worst, as we all know. And then people begin to worry about sleeping. So you're not just worrying about your worries, you'll worry about actual falling asleep. But many patients will want something like Ambien or an Ativan, not to take it, but simply because they know it's there, so they don't worry so much about what happens if they don't fall asleep. And there's actually a nice study looking at rumination and exercise. Exercise is one of the ways that you can mediate the stress response by decreasing rumination and decreasing cortisol.
What about fertility? Does it have an effect on fertility, Sarita?
Yes, so fertility, there are studies that have shown that when you're highly stressed and chronic stress particularly will alter stress hormones, and the stress axis is very closely tied to the gonadal axis or the sex hormone axis, which are very intricately involved in making sure we are fertile and that we're able to get pregnant. So there's a very tight connection between those two pathways in our brain and the body, and one clearly influences the other.
We are talking about stress on today's Please Explain segment. We invite your calls at 212-433-9692, or you can write us at WNYC.org on our show page. Our guests are Dr. Rajita Sinha, Director of the Yale Stress Center and Professor of Psychiatry, Neurobiology, and Child Studies at the Yale University School of Medicine. Later, I want to get to stress in children as well, Dr. Sinha. And Dr. Drew Ramsey, Assistant Clinical Professor of Psychiatry at Columbia University's College of Physicians and Surgeons. And we're going to take a little break, find out a little more about what's going on at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut. And then we'll be back with your questions and calls and find out about some more aspects of stress on today's Please Explain.